tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. Great to see you guys. Very excited and honored that you made church a priority on a holiday weekend. I think that's really cool, and so excited for you guys to be here. My name is Rob, and if I haven't had a chance to meet you, I'd love to meet you. I'll be hanging out up here at the front or out in the lobby, and would love to meet you after the service. I want to invite all of you to dig in a little bit more and get something else out of this service besides just sitting there. And the way that you can do that is to dig in with a free app called YouVersion. And if you've been here for a while and have never tried this out, I recommend it highly. If you're new, go ahead and test it out. The steps are up there on the screen. But we provide a place for you to take notes as well as give you some next steps. And there's some fun stuff in there like a poll. Well, today we're continuing our series entitled The Second Mile. And it's based off Jesus' teaching that Jesus said, if your enemy causes you or asks you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles instead. And the question that we're asking is, if Jesus said to do this for our enemies, how much more should we do this for the people that we love? How much more should we do it for our families and at our jobs and even for our church? What does it mean to go the second mile? Chick-fil-A is an organization that has second mile service. It's a part of their core values, and one of the bigwigs at Chick-fil-A has said this quote, and I've been reading it to you every week. Dan Cathy says this: if you want to make a difference, step over the line and into that second mile, because magical things happen there. There's joy and fun and reward in the second mile. The thing I love about that quote is it starts with, if you want to make a difference. And I'm convinced that every single one of you want to make a difference. The problem is so often we stop at the first mile. And so we're left wondering, does my life really matter? Does my life really make a difference? Do the things that I'm doing, does it really impact anyone? And I'm convinced that you will be able to tell that when you push past the first mile and go into the second mile. The second mile is where the magic happens. It's where the fun and the reward is experienced. It's all in the second mile. And today, what I want to do is I want to talk to you about the key to going the second mile. I'm convinced that if you would apply and would listen and take some notes and think about this, it would transform every relationship in your life. This is a key that will help you push past when you don't want to go the second mile. It's going to help push you to the second mile. It is a key that is so important that it is a theme. It is one of the main themes of Jesus' life, and then it is echoed all throughout the New Testament. Every single one of us are wired to ask the question, what can I get? And today what we're going to look at is a better question, a way to get to the second mile, is to ask the question, what can I give? I want to show you this in our text. I'll give you a little bit of backstory. Our text today comes from the letter that was written by a guy by the name of Paul. Sometimes he is called the Apostle Paul. The word apostle is just a churchy word. It is an early church word that's found in the Bible. It simply means a messenger who was sent out by God, specifically by Jesus. So there's only a handful of apostles. We don't have apostles today because Jesus isn't literally giving people messages verbally and saying, go do this. He gave Paul a message that was to go around the world and to spread his message. And so Paul became an apostle and went around the world and told people about Jesus' message. And he was ended up being thrown in prison. And while he was in prison, he wrote a bunch of letters to the churches that he started around the world. And one of those churches was a church in Philippi. And Paul writes an incredibly encouraging letter to them while he's sitting in prison. And so at Next Level, we like to show honor for the text. And before you stand up, some of you are getting ready to jump the gun. You knew it was coming. Before you stand up, I just want to set the mood here, okay? What we're about to do, this is the main course. Like, this is the part we've been waiting on. This is like what you've experienced so far. This has been like the chips and salsa at Plaza. Like, it's been amazing. It's been great. But now the main course is being brought out to us. We're about to feast on the very words of God. We're about to hear the words of God and chew on it. And so when we stand and try to show honor to this text, it's not about me. It has nothing to do with me, the pastor, or this church. It literally has to do with prepping our hearts to say, we're excited to hear from God. And so I want us to show some enthusiasm. And so if you're excited to hear from God, if you're ready for the main course, would you make some noise and stand your feet as we read our text for today? Some of you could at least fake it next time if we do this. I expected a little bit more out of you. Philippians 2, 3 through 5. Let's read it together. It says, Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. Now that we've read the text, let's go to God in prayer. God, we just come before you right now, and we just ask that you would just still our minds. We ask that you would remove the distractions from our hearts, from our souls, and from our minds. And we ask, God, that you would just speak to us in ways that only you can. So easily, God, we can dismiss your word and say it's for someone else. But God, would you just help us to chew on what you're telling us to do today? Would you help us, God, to have the courage to obey you no matter how scary it is, no matter how challenging it is? Would you help us to do whatever you tell us to do? And God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. All right. To kick things off, I want to have a little quiz. And specifically, I need someone who is under the age of 30 or below. And I'm not going to embarrass you. Okay? I know that typically when I ask for volunteers, everyone looks the opposite way. No one makes eye contact with me. And like everyone is like really scared. But I want to show you that this is not meant to for your harm. This is not meant to embarrass you. This is actually meant for your good. I have here a box of glazed donuts from Hampton. There. That changed things quickly. All right. I saw your hand really quick. Stand up. Tell us your name.
Blake.
Everyone say hi, Blake.
Hi, Blake.
Say thank you for volunteering so we weren't forced to. You don't have to say that. All right. So, Blake, here's what we're going to do. I want to show you some iconic people. These are people that have been dead for a minute, but most people know who they are. Like, we've made stamps after them, even though we don't really use stamps anymore. They had their own stamp. These are like really, really famous people, okay? So you may not know them, okay, but you should, all right? So we won't make fun of you if you don't know them, but just know that glazed donuts is on the line, okay? All right, so give us the first image. Who is that?
Elvis Presley.
Elvis Presley, that's the correct answer. Specifically, we're going to give you a point for that. Specifically, though, we were looking for young Elvis. Young Elvis, okay? But you got it, Elvis Presley. All right, show us the second picture. Okay? Tell us who that is.
Still looks like Elvis Presley.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us specifically about that?
Old Elvis Presley.
We were actually looking for military or army Elvis Presley. Did you know that Elvis went in the military for 2 years and didn't record any music? He served his country for 2 years, which is pretty cool. So you don't get a point for that, okay? But you still have a chance for donuts, all right? The next one is crucial. You need to get this one, okay? This is really important that you get this one, okay? This is, what do you think this is?
Leather-wearing Elvis Presley.
We're going to give you a point for that one. The exact answer was comeback special Elvis, but leather wearing Elvis will get you a point as well, okay? If you get this one right, the last one right, you get a donut, okay? Last picture. All right.
Old Elvis Presley.
Old Elvis Presley. We'll give you credit for that. We would also take drug addict Elvis or fat Elvis. So we'll give you credit for that. And here you get... You're welcome. All right, give it up for her. If you've never been to Glazed Donuts, they're locally owned. They're in Hampton. They are fat-free. They're holy. Literally, pun intended. They're from God. They're amazing donuts. Okay, so here's the question. Why in the world are we talking about Elvis Presley? That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. We're talking about Elvis Presley because he is one of the most iconic human beings who has ever come through America. He has so much fame and fortune. He is literally known by almost everyone. In fact, he died in 1977, and yet most people who weren't around anywhere near 1977 still at least have an idea of who Elvis Presley was. Elvis Presley sold 600 million albums. 600 million albums. Wrap your mind around that. That is a massive amount of music. Not only that, but he made 31 movies. Not very many people have sold that many albums and made that many movies. Now, most of his movies were terrible, and the critics hated him. But here's something most people don't know. His movies made money. In fact, while he was alive making these awful movies, a phrase went through Hollywood that you couldn't bank on almost any other type of movie, that it was scary to make type of movies, except, this is the literal phrase, an Elvis Presley picture is the only sure thing in Hollywood. So even though he was making awful movies, they were making money. He is such an iconic figure that to this day, even though he died in 1977, his house, Graceland, makes $32 million a year. $32 million a year from people going and visiting his house, and he's been dead since 1977. Elvis has, literally, he had everything the American dream can promise. He was born and raised poor, didn't have a lot of hope of making it, and yet, because he had some talent and had some drive and some grit, he made it incredibly famous. Not just famous, he became an icon. And yet, at the age of 42, Elvis Presley was a drug addict, he was overweight, and he was depressed. His ex-wife, Priscilla, said this about Elvis, and I think this quote is heartbreaking and telling. She said that Elvis never came to terms with who he was meant to be or what his purpose in life was. He thought he was here for a reason, maybe to preach, maybe to serve, maybe to save, maybe to care for people. Now check out this next line. That agonizing desire was always with him, and he knew he wasn't fulfilling it. So he'd go up on stage so he wouldn't have to think about it. That is an incredibly heartbreaking line about one of the most iconic human beings who have ever come out of America, that literally he got on stage so he could escape the fact that he didn't think that his life had purpose or that it had meaning or that he was making a difference. Now, I didn't know Elvis personally. I was born in 78. He died in 77. So I don't know the guy. So what I'm about to say is just a theory. And I have a theory as to why he lacked a purpose. I think at some point in Elvis's life, he was a guy who loved God. In fact, he made multiple gospel albums dedicated to God. He was deeply religious. But at some point in his life, he thought that in order to serve God, he had to do something different than what he was gifted to do. And God gave Elvis the ability to sing, and God gave Elvis the ability to act, and God gave Elvis the ability to shake his hips. And at some point, he lost focus and thought that all of that was supposed to be for his own fame and fortune. And he went out and he just tried to live life and do these things to see what he could get from these experiences, as opposed to saying, what can I do to serve people? He literally would sell out shows and bring such life and encouragement to people, but he couldn't see it because at the end of the day, his experiences were all about him. And even though you and I may never reach Elvis status, I'm convinced that if we're not careful, we're going to live our lives and have the exact same regrets. God has given you some specific gifts and talents. He's given you a purpose, a reason to live in this life. But if you're not careful, you'll think that everything God has given you has just been given for you to enjoy on yourself. But the real magic in life is not meant when we just say, what can I get out of this? The real magic is found when we learn how to make a difference and say, how can I give this away? That's when the magic happens. I want to give you the main idea right up front. The main idea today, if you're taking notes in YouVersion or in some other form, you can write this down. It's the first thing to write down. It's simply this: Elvis has left the building. I'm kidding. That's not the main idea. The main idea is this: life has meaning when you focus on serving and giving. Life has meaning when you focus on serving and giving. The Bible actually talks about the way to get the most out of life, and it's something that we ignore, even though it's a theme all throughout, especially the New Testament. It's a theme that we ignore, but if we could just pay attention to it, it would unlock meaningful relationships in our life. It would change the way that we even view going to church. It would change the way that we view our relationship with God. It would change everything if we could just apply this theme verse. It's a way that Jesus actually lived. It's a way that he lived his life. It's a way that he preached. And if we could just wrap our minds around it, I am convinced it would unlock so much stuff in our life. It would help us to stop going just 1 mile, and we would live to go the second mile. Our verse, we read about it earlier, but I want to break it down. I want to break it down by reading parts of the verse together. Philippians 2:3, Paul is writing to the church in Philippi. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Did you catch what Paul just wrote? He said, do nothing out of selfish ambition. Let's talk about selfish ambition just for a second. What is selfish ambition? Selfish ambition is a lifestyle based on get. That's selfish ambition. It is a lifestyle based on get. Now here's the thing. Every single one of us are born with some selfish ambition. The question that we always ask ourselves, it is the first question that comes across every single one of our minds. Whenever we're asked to do anything, whenever we have an opportunity, whenever we have a chance to do anything in life, the first question that comes to our minds is this: what am I going to get out of it? And every time you're given an opportunity, you just naturally weigh the pros and cons. Is this going to be worth my effort? Am I going to get more out of it than I give? And if you in your mind think, yes, I'm going to get more out of it than I give, then you do whatever the opportunity is. But if in your mind you can't figure out a way that you're going to get something more out of what you're going to give, then you wrestle with it and you say, I don't know if I want to do that. That's why when your friends tell you that they're moving, you change your phone number and you're like, I'm not going to answer it if they call. Because it's like hard work to help a friend move. Because you're like, I'm not going to get anything out of helping them move. It's going to be awful. We always ask constantly. So this is why at church, when we talk about things like, hey, you need a group. One of our core values is you can't do life alone. And everyone like nods their head and says, yep, that's right. But then when it comes time to sign up for a group, what does everyone ask? Well, what am I going to get out of it? And if I'm not going to get something great out of it, then I don't know if it's worth the effort. And we start rationalizing things in our mind, and we say, well, I already go to church once a week on Sundays. Do I really need to join a group? And I'm kind of busy, and maybe I don't really need that. And I already kind of have some friends. At least they're on Facebook. Sometimes I like their posts, and I don't think I really need to join a group. And we rationalize away the things that we need. Why? Because every time you are asked to do anything, it starts with, what am I going to get out of it? We are all wired to be somewhat selfish. So we're constantly asking, what am I going to get out of it? So we're consuming things. And at the end of the day, if we're not careful, we will consume something and it will leave us feeling like Elvis Presley, where we've done all this great stuff in this life, but then we ask ourselves, was it worth it? Did I get anything out of it? Because I've just consumed, but I don't know if I made a difference. Consuming, selfish ambition, it is a lifestyle based on get. Now here's the interesting thing about this. When surveyed, Americans, and asked about if they view themselves as selfish or not, 74% of people identify with being unselfish. So the way that most of us view ourselves is we say, I'm kind of selfish, but I'm mostly unselfish. So there's some selfish things in my life, but for the most part, I'm really unselfish. I think about others. I like to do good things. Like, you know, I go to church. Sometimes I vote. Like, I do all these great things. I'm not very selfish, right? So 74% view themselves as unselfish. Here's where it gets interesting. When talking about other people, according to Americans, we view 78% of other people as more selfish than they really are. So when it comes to the way that we view ourselves, we have a lens that says, I'm not that selfish, but everyone else is really selfish. It is literally something that is broken inside of us, and it is why it is so difficult to see the selfishness that's inside of you. It's why you can constantly point out and say, man, they are so selfish. Why don't they see that? And they can't see it. You can't see it in yourself. It is so much easier to see other people's selfishness than it is to see our own. In fact, psychologists call this fundamental attribution error. Fundamental attribution error is simply this, that when someone makes a mistake, we pass blame on them and say that there's something fundamentally flawed with them. So when someone does something selfish, we don't just say they have a good reason or I'm sure there's a good excuse. We say there's something wrong with that human being. So when someone doesn't return your text after you've texted them, You don't just say, I'm sure they're busy. I'm sure something's going on. In your mind, you jump to, they hate me and they're so selfish and I can't believe how selfish they are. And now I can't stand them. I don't even know why I'm friends with them anyway. And they're just always thinking about themselves. And you constantly take it to that they are a bad person because they didn't do something for you. But when you don't return someone's text, you give yourself the benefit of the doubt. And you don't say, yeah, I didn't return the text because I'm just so selfish. You say to yourself, I'm just so busy. I would love to return their text, but I've got so much stuff going on. There's an external reason as to why I had the exact same behavior that I said was selfish in someone else. Another way to say this is in life, we expect Chick-fil-A service when we give McDonald's service. We constantly want other people to give their best, but in our minds, we're not giving our best, and then we justify it away. We can't even see our own selfishness. And so when you do a talk and talk about Scripture and say, hey, listen, do nothing out of selfish ambition, you know what most of us are doing in here? Right away, we're thinking about someone else. Man, I sure wish she was here today to hear this talk. I sure wish my wife was here. I sure wish my neighbor was here. I sure wish my friend was here because they are so selfish. And you hear the word selfish and you don't think, you know what, this is going to be a good one for me. I should take some notes and apply this. You think about someone else. So what do we do about that? Well, Jesus' brother was a guy by the name of James, and he gives an amazing way to test yourself to see the areas in your life where you have some selfishness. James says in James 3:16, "For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice." So there's that word again, selfish ambition. And James says, "For wherever you have envy and wherever you have selfish ambition, there you find disorder." So let me ask you a question. Where is there disorder in your life? Wherever there's disorder in your life, you can trace it back to some form of selfishness. Every time we get into an argument with someone, we always think it's their fault, they're being so selfish, and I can't believe they did that. But it always takes two people to argue. And at the end of the day, the reason you get mad at another human being is because they've done something that you don't agree with. And at the end of the day, even our getting upset is about our selfishness of not doing it our way. And I would have folded the towels differently. I can't believe they folded them that way. I would never say that to that human being. I can't believe they did that. They're so rude. And we constantly focus on what other people are doing and how other people are selfish. But James says, look at your own life and where is there some disorder in your life? Look at the disorder and trace it back to some form of selfishness. So I look at this in my life and I'm like, okay, this Monday, Memorial Day, my wife and I are starting once again a brand new diet. We're not excited about it. We're not excited at all. In fact, we've been eating like our last meals. You know how when, before you go on a diet, you eat that like last meal? We've been doing that every day since Friday. We're like, what's our last meal going to be today? We're not excited about it at all. But why are we doing this? Because we look at an area in our life, the area where there's the most disorder is in the weight that we've gained over the last year and a half. There's disorder. There's something that we don't like. And what is that disorder tied to? Selfishness of saying, what can I get? I just want to consume. I want more. Anywhere in your life, if you have relational issues and you say, man, everyone is full of drama. Everyone's always fighting. Everyone's so selfish. And all my friends just think about themselves. And every one of my friends is so selfish. Well, listen, what does every one of your relationships have in common? You. And at the end of the day, if every one of your relationships is falling apart and there's just disorder everywhere, at some point you got to stop pointing the finger and look at what are you bringing to the table? We constantly are saying, what can I get? When we need to be saying, what can I give? How can I make this relationship better? How can I go the second mile to serve them? How can I go the second mile to fix this? We consume and we consume and it causes disorder into our lives. Let me ask you another question. What choices are you making that have a negative impact on those that you love? What choices are you making that have a negative impact on those that you love? When we have selfish behavior, we never see the impact of it. We justify it and we say, oh, it's not that big of a deal. I can get away with it. Oh, they'll understand. It's just this once. But our selfish behavior causes disorder. So what choices are you making that have a negative impact on those that you love? And I want to make sure that you get this. This isn't just talking about the big, like, awful areas in your life. It's talking about every area of your life. anywhere where there's some disorder, anywhere where there's not harmony, it is tied to one or both people being selfish. My wife is incredibly hard for me to buy gifts for. She came from a different type of gift-giving family than I did. And my wife's family, when it comes to holidays, my wife would literally tell her parents, this is what I want. And a lot of times she would go to the mall and buy what she wanted. And then her parents would wrap it and she would open it up. And that is mind-blowing to me. Like, that feels like that is killing Christmas. Like, I don't want that in my life. But that's how she does gifts. And so I'm constantly fighting against this because I want to surprise her. And I want her to have like this, you know, big-eyed look of like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. And so I'm constantly trying to give her these surprises. And she's like, I didn't really want that. We have this tradition in our family for Valentine's Day where we take turns on whose day it is to plan Valentine's Day or whose year it is. And so one year she plans everything and does the date and does the gifts and I'm off the hook. And then the next year all the pressure's on me. And it's a fun little tradition. Well, a couple years ago it was my year, and because our house had fallen apart, we had a very strict budget of what I could spend on Valentine's Day. And so I had very limited funds and I had to make it stretch a long way. And so I said in my mind, I'm going to make this the best Valentine's Day ever. I'm not going to let money be the reason why she's not having a special Valentine's Day. And so I went to Pinterest. I signed up. I got an account on Pinterest. And I found something that I thought was an amazing gift for my wife. I thought it's incredibly romantic. It's going to be something she can hold on to. And ultimately, I thought, this gift is so good, I'm going to get some. Attention on social media. I thought she was going to take a picture and post it on Facebook. Get your minds out of the gutter. We're in church, people. I knew that this gift was so good, she was going to take a picture of it and share it with all of her friends. And I couldn't wait for her to see it. And let me tell you about the gift. It was a message in a bottle. Specifically, I had to go to the craft store. Like, I've never spent time there in my life. And I bought a bottle. It was a good-sized bottle. And in the cork, I had to buy a chain and cut the chain and attach the chain into the cork. And midway down on the chain, I had to make a heart. And so I bought a sheet of felt. And I cut a heart out of the felt. And I attached the heart to the chain. And then at the bottom, there's a scroll. And I got to write a personalized message to my wife. And I rolled it up in a scroll and I put it at the very bottom of it. And I displayed this gift for her on Valentine's Day. And she came in and she saw it and she was like, oh, is this my gift? I'm like, yep. Now, I did some other things. I got her flowers and I got her some donuts from Glazed Donuts and I got her some balloons. But like, I was thinking like this was the gift. Like, this was going to be the Valentine's Day of all Valentine's Days. And like, I didn't see any love on social media. And so later that day, after we put the kids to bed, I get on social media and I'm just kind of scrolling through, kind of looking. I look through Facebook and I'm not seeing any posts about my message in the bottle. And so I go to her specific page and like there's nothing. And so I'm like, oh, maybe she posted on Instagram and forgot to link it to Facebook. So I go over to Instagram and there's nothing. There's not a word about it. There's not like even a mention. There's like nothing. And so I just looked over and I said, hey, babe, how'd you feel about the message in the bottle that I gave you? She's like, oh, it was fine. It was okay. It's not really my thing. I'm like, okay. Okay. Now, in this moment, it would be incredibly easy for me to just say, oh, how does she not know how much work I put into this? And like, none of these other husbands go to Pinterest. I don't even know what Pinterest is. And like, I went to the craft store and I had to look up what felt was. And like, I did all this stuff. How does she not appreciate this effort? It would be very easy to point the finger and say, she is in the wrong. But here is the issue with that gift. The whole point of that gift was me trying to get some attention by doing something that would cause her to post a gift on social media. And the truth of the matter is what I really should have done is said, hey, babe, what do you need? Because if I could get to the heart of my wife and figure out what she needs, then she would post whatever I gave her on social media. So I had this revelation that I've been trying to give her these gifts to try to get something in return, and that's incredibly selfish. And so I'm asking myself, where's their disorder? Well, it's not like we were fighting. It's not like we were on the verge of a divorce. But this gift-giving thing, it was difficult because I was giving her stuff and she wasn't like, woo, that's amazing. And so I was like, ah, how do I fix this? So since that moment, I just simply started saying, I'm going to listen to her needs. What does she need? And I'm going to provide it. That way I can still surprise her, but she'll actually like whatever I get her. So this year for Mother's Day, I've been listening to my wife. She works a job. It's an in-home business, and she's really busy with our twins. And she often says that the most difficult part, the most frustrating part of her life is just the meal prep of thinking and brainstorming dinner and grocery shopping and making dinner. And she doesn't complain in a bad way. She loves her life. She's not saying, woe is me. But I just hear these little comments. And so I followed it away and said, that's a need. I'm hearing what my wife is saying. If I can figure out a way to fix this, I'll get some love on social media. So for Mother's Day, I did some research and I found out, I didn't know this, you guys probably know this, you're more savvy than I am, but I found out that there are whole companies that do meal prep, and it's like a meal in a box, and it comes with recipes, and it comes with all the ingredients, and you don't have to go to the grocery store, like they deliver it to your doorstep. And I thought, that is going to get me some love on social media if I can provide this. So for Mother's Day, I bought her this gift, and guess what? She posted it. The second she saw it, she posted it on social media. Why? Because I listened and I met a need. And so often in our relationships, we are so focused on what can I get that we are constantly trying to get something from someone, and they're constantly letting us down because human beings weren't meant to be consumed. They were meant to have a relationship with. And they were meant to be figure out ways on how you can give and not just give. Life has meaning when you focus on serving and giving. So what do we do if we have some ambition in life? What do you do if you have some big dreams and you're like, hey, I want to do something great. And like, I want to be like Elvis. I want to be a great singer. Like, what do I do with these great gifts? I would say that if you have a big dream in your life, if you want to write a great book, if you want to even become famous, if you want to do something amazing, then maybe that idea is given to you by God, but it wasn't given to you to simply spend on your own pleasure. Every gift that God gives us is meant to be shared with other people. So if you have a desire to buy a boat, go buy a boat. But don't think that that boat is just for you. You better be sharing the boat with your pastor and other people. If you have a nice house, you don't have to say, woe is me, I'm a Christian and I should just be living in the slums. I shouldn't have a nice house. No, if you have a nice house, maybe God's given you the gift of working hard and you have a great job and you've been able to provide a nice house, but eventually you will resent your house if you don't have the mindset that that house was not given to you by God to be spent just on your own pleasure. Everything that God gives you is meant not just to get, but to give. Everything. Every talent, every dime that you have, every job that you have, every person that you have is not meant just to say, what can I get? It is meant to say, how can I give this back? God gives us things so we can return it and give it back and to bless the world. If we could just change that mindset, it would impact so many of our relationships. Because we're constantly frustrated, those of us that are married, we're frustrated at our spouses because we keep saying, they're not meeting my needs. What are you asking? What can I get from them? And what should you be saying? What can I give to them? What do we say about our jobs? It's not meeting my needs. I don't like it anymore. What should we be saying? What can I give back to my job? And guess what? This happens in the church world all the time. We come to church and we say, what can I get out of it? And eventually when we say, what can I get? Eventually we consume it. We end up getting bitter and frustrated and we leave and we go hope that another church can meet our needs. But it's not about what you can get. It's about what you can give. And if you want to maximize your church experience, yes, get something. I hope you're growing. I hope you're learning something. I hope you enjoy coming to church here. But in order to not consume it completely, you got to figure out a way to give back. You've got to. Or you'll consume it and turn it around. Life has meaning when you focus on serving and giving. So how do you do something great and not do it for selfish ambition? I love this quote by Zig Ziglar. He says, you will get all you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want. You will get all you want in life if you help enough people get what they want. The temptation in our mind is, if I want something, I got to fight for it. I need to be selfish. I need to put myself first. But here's the truth of the matter. If you serve people, you'll never be in want. If you give to others, if you figure out a way, how do I meet a need? How do I give back? God will provide everything that you need in this world. In fact, your relationships will be magical. Because it's not just about what you can get, it's about what you can give. Paul goes on to say in Philippians 2, 3 through 4, he says, rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. This is such a practical teaching. Don't look to your own interests, but actually look to the interests of the other people in your life. How do we do that? Well, I love this idea, this quote, service is finding practical ways to show people they matter even when they can't return the favor. That's how you do that. Service is finding practical ways to show people they matter even when you can't return the favor. You know what the temptation for us is? The temptation is to look for people who can benefit us. So when there's someone that you want to impress, you look for ways to serve them because you can get something from them. But that's not where the magic happens. Where the magic happens is when you look at every person in your life and you think, how can I make their life better? You matter to me. And I'm going to let you know it. I'm going to figure out what you need. I'm going to ask what you need, and I'm going to provide it. I'm going to make sure that if you're in my life, you know that you're important to me. You know what we do after a couple years? After a couple years, according to psychology, we take people for granted. That literally, this is how human beings are wired. That after about 3 years, your body says, your mind says, that person isn't going anywhere, so I can now take them for granted, and I can focus my energy on new people that I want to win over. How messed up is that? And so you know what we do? We don't go around telling the people that we love how much we love them because we just assume they're always going to be there. And so we wait until the people that we love are either dead or moving away to tell them how much we care about them. And let me just tell you, you can't guarantee they're going to be with you forever. So if there's someone good in your life, if there's someone you love, let them know they matter to you. If you ever think anything good about any human being, you share it right then, right now. It's a rule I have for my life. If I ever think anything good, I share it. I say it. I text it. I tweet it. I Facebook it. I write it in a letter. I just let people know. I don't know when my last day is, and I don't know when their last day is. So I want everyone that is in my life to know you matter, not just to me, but you matter to God. So Paul says, each of you, take interest in others. So let's ask some questions just to get you thinking about this. Do you understand before trying to be understood? Do you understand before trying to be understood? In a relationship, is your goal to make sure they understand your point of view, or do you ask the question, where are they coming from? When someone posts something online that is a different opinion of yours, do you ask, how can I see where they're coming from? Or you just say, they're a blooming idiot. Let me tell them how they should believe. Deep relationships that go far is when you say, even though I don't agree, let me understand your point of view. Even though I don't understand, even though I have a different view, let me understand you. Do you understand before trying to be understood? Do you take the time to listen and learn about others, or are you focused more on your own agenda? Do you take the time to listen and learn about others? If you have a job, do you know what your coworkers like? Do you know what's going on in their life? Do you know what they're struggling with? If you have neighbors, do you know what's going on in their life? Maybe they're the worst neighbors ever because they're going through some major issue. And if you could just figure out that struggle, maybe you could get to the reason that they're being such jerks to you. Do you take the time to listen and learn to others, or are you focused more on your own agenda? Do you know your friends' favorites? When you hang out with your friends, do you know what they're dreaming about? Do you know what their favorite beverage is? Do you know how they like it? Do you know what they would order at their favorite restaurant? Do you know what's on their birthday wish list? Like, do you know how to serve your friends? Do you know what their favorites are? If you want great friends, be a great friend. Do you have anyone in your life that you serve even though they can't pay you back? Is there anyone in your life that you try to serve and they can't benefit you by serving them? If you have toddlers, they don't count. Because one day those kids are going to grow up and they're going to mow your grass, so they're going to serve you. So do you have anyone in your life that you serve even though they can't pay you back? This week I was listening to Mike and Mike. It's a sports show on ESPN. And they interviewed Ryan Leaf. He is a former quarterback, drafted number 2 in the NFL. He had a lot of promise and a lot of potential, but he never met it. In fact, he became a drug addict and ended up throwing away everything, all the promise, all of his career. He ended up getting arrested for his drug addiction. And in fact, they asked him kind of how he got arrested. And he said that, "I used to pray to God that he would stop this. And God provided a way. It was through the sheriff's department. And they arrested me and put me in prison. And that's how this drug addiction stopped." Well, they asked him, like, what was his breaking part? What was his, like, lowest part? And it was fascinating. I didn't know anything about Ryan Leaf, but what he said captured my attention, because he said he was in prison and he was Googling how to take his own life, and he was Googling how to kill himself, and literally he was at his lowest point in life, and his roommate, his cellmate in prison, looks at him and says, "You don't know your own value in this life, and that's your problem." And he said, "Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go down the hallway to the library, and we're going to teach inmates who don't know how to read, we're going to teach them how to read." And Ryan Leaf said it was the very first time in his life that he ever served someone without expecting something in return. He said that in his life, he had the attitude of an addict long before he ever tried a drug. That the attitude of an addict was just consume. It was entitlement. It was, "I deserve this." It's just to get, to consume, to take from people. And he said that was his mindset long before he ever tried a drug. And then he tried a drug, and the consumer mindset just consumed it until it destroyed his life. But when he actually helped someone, is what set him free from an addiction. I love what author Simon Sinek says. He says, "You can easily judge the character of a man by how he treats those who can do nothing for him. You can easily judge the character of a man by how he treats those who can do nothing for him." So Paul then says in Philippians 2:5, he says, "In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus." Now, why is going to church, and why is reading your Bible, and why is having a relationship with Jesus so incredibly important? It's so important because every single one of us are drawn to selfishness. There's nothing else in my life that is pulling me away from myself. Jesus is it. Nothing else is saying, "Hey, you know what, you really shouldn't be so selfish. You really shouldn't be focused on your own needs. You really should try to serve people." There's nothing else in the world that is doing that in my life. And I doubt there's very much that's doing that in your life. We are wired to consume and say, "Get, let me just take." And Jesus said, he was the greatest man ever to live, and he said, "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve." The greatest man ever to live. You know why we're still talking about Jesus today? It's not just because he did some miracles and because he said some really great things. It's because he served people well. And ultimately, he laid down his life for us. I don't know if you've ever read the stories of Jesus, but Jesus was an incredibly busy guy, and he had a lot of stuff going on, and he only had 3.5 years of ministry. And so if you think about your life and how busy you are and how you're running from one thing to the next, if you knew that you only had 3.5 years to accomplish something big to change the world, you would probably just tune out everything that was just like not really important, that couldn't benefit you. But Jesus often took time for people that had no benefit to his life. In fact, I would challenge you to read through the story of Jesus and see how often he stops to help people that can't benefit him. In fact, there's this one time he's leaving Jericho and he's going into Jerusalem, where he is going to end up being tried and crucified, and he is headed towards his mission. It's incredibly important, and there's a large crowd around him, and they're following around him, and he's walking on mission to get to where he needs to go, and there's 2 blind guys by the side of the road, and they start screaming out, and they're like, "Jesus, have mercy on us." And you know what the crowd says to these blind guys? "Shut up. Leave him alone. Don't you know who this is? This is Jesus. He's important. He didn't have time for you." But they just kept shouting, "Son of David, Jesus, have mercy on us." And in the midst of his busiest season, when he was on mission to go die on a cross, he breaks away from the crowd and he gets in the face of these 2 blind guys that could literally do nothing for his own life. And he looks them in the eyes and he says, "What do you need?" How deeper would our relationships be if we started with that question? What do you need? It's not just about what I need, but what do you need? How can I serve you? What can I do to make your life better? What are you struggling with? What are you worried about? What do you need? And they told him that we're blind and we would love to be healed. And Jesus was like, okay, you're healed. And so it was a pretty cool miracle. But the important thing is that Jesus took time to stop. I love this quote by Rick Warren. He says, being a servant means giving up the right to control your schedule and allowing God to interrupt it anytime he needs to. I just wonder if the people in your life feel like you're just too busy for them. That they don't matter because you have a schedule, you have places to go, and you're so important. But do your kids know how much you value them? Does your spouse know that they're a priority? Do the people that you work with understand that they matter? Does your family know that you care about them? Do you take time to stop along the journey and say, what do you need? How can I serve you? How can I make a difference? Life has meaning when you focus on serving and giving. So many people serve to get something in return. And so this is how it looks in our relationships. We serve for friendships. And then when that friendship doesn't benefit us anymore, we move on and we go to another friendship because we're like, oh, they're not really meeting our needs, or they're not fun anymore, or I'm not getting anything out of them. And I just feel like that is the dysfunctional way to live life. If you're here today and you'd say, yeah, I would like deeper friendships, then instead of just saying, looking around people and saying, hey, what can I get from them? Start saying, hey, what can I give to them? Here's a temptation in friendship. Oftentimes, when you want to be friends with people, you see something they do on social media and they didn't include you or they didn't invite you. And so you're like, I didn't get what I want in this relationship. So now I'm going to let them have it. And so you send them a text and say, I sure would have liked to have been invited to Fro-Yo. I enjoy doing that too. Why didn't I get invited to Busch Gardens? And we try to guilt people into being our friends. No friendship has ever been won over guilt. Here's a way to flip that. Instead of being offended because you didn't get something out of the friendship, start saying to yourself, what can I give back? If we're not spending time with each other, then let me pour more into it. And if they're not receptive to that, maybe I need to go find some friends that are. But I'm going to look at people, not just what can I get, I'm going to look at people and say, what can I give? So if you're lonely on a Friday night and you see your friends hanging out and they didn't invite you, go invite people and have a party. Invite someone to come over and say, hey, let's go hang out. There is someone that needs you. But you got to stop saying, what can I get out of this relationship? What about in marriage? Marriages are so difficult because we go to marriage based off what can this person give to me? And you will always be frustrated in your marriage if you try to consume them and say, what can you give me? Because human beings were not meant to be consumed. Your spouse will always let you down if you're looking at them and asking the question, what can I get from you? Because they'll never be able to hit your standards, and they'll never be able to be as perfect as you want them to be, and they'll never be able to meet all your needs. And so the way that you get your needs met is you stop saying, spouse, let me see what I can get, and you start saying, spouse, let me tell you what I can give. I'm going to pour into this thing. I'm going to figure this out. What do you need? How can I be a blessing back? When you do that, something switches in your spouse's mind, and they want to give back in return. What about your church? The temptation at church is to simply ask, what can I get? And let me just tell you, if you ask that question, the vast majority of you will be gone in 3 years, according to statistics. The way that you fight against this is it's not just what can I get. You got to start asking, what can I give? So I hope you get something out of coming to church here, but it's also about what you give. So let me just tell you a practical thing that will unlock your church experience. If you want to get more out of church, invest in an unchurched person who doesn't have a church that they belong to and invite them to come with you. Because when they come and they sit next to you, all of a sudden, you're not just thinking about were all my needs met. You start thinking about were their needs met. Instead of just saying, the coffee wasn't my favorite, or the cinnamon rolls weren't my favorite, or I didn't really like the song selection, or Rob kind of preached long, I didn't really like that. Instead of just focusing on what we can get, you start to see church through the eyes of someone else, and it changes your perspective. Because you start to say, man, I'm so thankful that we have Parkers out in the parking lot, and I'm so thankful that we have people working back with our kids and our tots, and they're working with them. And when you hear there's a need, you don't just think, oh, someone else will take that. You say, nah, my friends are coming. They don't know Jesus. I'm going to meet a need wherever there is, because it's not just about what I can get. It's about what I can give. So let me give you the application for today. This is how we're going to close. The application is simply this. Listen to the people in your life and provide second mile service to one person this week. Listen to the people in your life and provide second mile service to one to at least one person this week. Let's pray. God, thank you for this day. Thank you for your grace and that you modeled for us what it means to serve others. We just ask in Jesus' name that you would forgive us for being so consumed with ourselves. And we ask right now, God, that you would help us to not just ask what we can get, but we would ask, what can we give? Help us to unlock ways to serve others. And help us to experience the magic that can happen with life when we make a difference in someone else's life. Thank you for serving us first. Help us to rely on that strength as we give back to others who can't give back to us. Thank you for what you're going to do. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.